court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Welcome to Court Appointed, two dudes' perspective on legal frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Well, I've been getting pretty amped up for this this episode.
Amped up?
Like I'm basically feel like I'm sitting in an electric chair here, Tommy.
Well, yeah, that's a place you don't want to be sitting, I would say.
You're right about that.
And I'm the guy who's going to throw the switch, dude.
This is a kind of our follow-up episode to our previous one about murder and different aspects of first degree, second degree. This is going to be an episode about capital punishment, kind of the history of it and some trends and just different things about capital punishment.
Well, that sounds very interesting. I know that that's always a hot topic. It's one of those topics that there's the for it and again it.
It's true.
You know, there's a lot on either side, and you could argue that both ways. So we're hoping to feed you some information here of the current state of the death penalty, how it came about, and where it's at now.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those polarizing type issues that people don't feel too adamant about. Like, usually no one says, like, how do you feel about death penalty, capital punishment? You know, take it or leave it, I don't care. Nah, you don't get that response too often. Usually it's, I'm for it or I'm against it.
Well, I'm usually one of those ones that says, I think they should expand the use of it.
Right.
But after doing some of the research that we've done, I don't know that my mind still feels the same.
That's pretty interesting.
Well, that's, you know, you think of it as a way to do away with it, but do away with, you know, the bad behavior and so that it doesn't keep coming back out because our prison systems are overrun.
Right.
And they keep changing the rules for letting people out on probation and reducing sentences because of overcrowding. And there's so much of that going on. You say, well, you know, if we killed a bunch of them, that would make more room.
It seems
not
like
the answer, I don't think.
It seems like a simple answer.
It does seem like a simple answer.
It seems like most things that are simple answers usually aren't the best answers for complicated issues such as this.
That's true.
It's not a black and white world we live in.
Now, I do have two things that I have to bring up that kind of relate to our last episode, which was the different types of murder, and our current episode. They're kind of tied together. The first one is, I don't know how to go about this, but I'm wondering if the Chicago Cubs can be charged with murder. Because the old broad that we talked about, we respectfully referred to as the old broad, the 108-year-old Mabel Ball.
Yeah.
And I jokingly said, well, now that the Cubs have won the World Series, she won't last a month. Hell, she didn't even last a week. I think she died less than a week later. I'm a harbinger of death.
Well, the Cubs, you may have some causation issues trying to prove the Cubs were responsible.
If they hadn't won, she'd still be alive. That was the only thing keeping her alive.
The culpable Cubs.
That's right. So I'm wondering if they'll bring any charges against them for killing poor old Mabel.
I don't think so. The only thing the Cubs have murdered this year has been the ball with all the home runs they hit.
I don't know. Poor old Mabel. We'll never hear again. Mabel, keep your elbows off the table.
Yeah, some of our listeners put that article up on our Facebook page, our Court Appointed Facebook page, and let us know that she had passed away.
Yeah, that's a shame. We're sorry to hear that. I hate that I predicted her death like that. I had several people say, please don't mention my name on your podcast. I don't want to be next.
That's the most of the emails we get are usually, please do not mention my name on your podcast.
I'll say it wrong anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
So maybe fate won't know who I meant.
Yeah. Death will end up somebody's at the wrong doorstep mispronouncing their name. Like, no. They live two doors down.
Now, the other one, number two that I wanted to bring up, there's one of the things that we didn't mention because it isn't murder, but it is attempted murder. I have a real problem with attempted murder. I don't think there should be such a thing as attempted murder. Because if you go up to somebody and you shoot them four times and you walk away and that poor son of a bitch lives, now you don't get charged with murder. You get charged with attempted murder. Your intention was to kill him.
It's true.
But they didn't die. They just lived through it. And so now you're only charged with attempted murder. I don't think there should be a difference. If your intent was to kill somebody, that should be all there is to it. It shouldn't matter whether the guy was lucky enough to live or not.
So basically, if you are so inept that your murder plot didn't go through, that you should still be tried with it.
Yeah, why should you get a bonus out of that? Oh, okay, well, he didn't kill him. Well, he tried hard as hell. He just didn't succeed. He just wasn't very good at it. So, I mean, if you can have somebody charged with murder because them and their partner were committing a crime and the partner, say, got shot by the police or shot in an exchange of gunfire and died, and you can charge the other criminal with murder, you should be able to charge them with murder if they tried to kill somebody. They drive by shooting and shoot random people. Okay, so where they live. It doesn't matter. You were spraying bullets. You meant to kill people. You should be charged with murder. I think attempted murder should not be a thing.
And what Tommy's talking about is in our last episode, we were kind of going over the different types of murder. One aspect of first-degree murder is felony murder. So basically, if you kill someone or someone dies while you are in the commission of a felony, then you're charged with felony murder. And that's generally viewed as a first-degree murder.
That is correct, counselor. Yes. You phrased it much better than me because I get all worked up over these things.
Right. Well, I just got to make sure to explain. We want people out there lost, trying to keep up with us.
Well, listen to all the episodes and you won't be lost. How's that for advice?
Yes. Start with the first one.
Start with the first one and work your way forward. And if you listen to them once and you need a refresher course, go back and download them and listen to them again. That's my advice. I have to listen to them every time. I don't remember half of what I said.
I listened to them quite a bit as I edit through them. So, believe it or not, there is some editing that goes on in this podcast.
No.
So, capital punishment. And basically, capital punishment is taking someone's life in exchange for a crime they've committed.
An eye for an eye.
Right. That's the eye for an eye is the standard that's been, I think that's biblical, isn't it? Eye for an eye.
Yeah.
Old Testament. But execution of criminals, it's been used in almost every society in all of history. It's come down through the ages, and the Bible is full of it. The history books are full of it. It's just a common thing. I mean, there's some countries that use it a bit more excessively than others, but for the most part, in modern society, it's been kind of... modern Western society, that is, it's kind of been cut back quite a bit.
You could say excessively, or you could say efficiently.
Efficiently?
I think that's the problem in America, is that we don't use it efficiently.
Yeah. Well, we'll get on to the efficiency of it, because it is certainly not efficient. So one of the earlier crimes that you could be put to death for that I found in England was the Buggery Act of 1533.
The Buggery Act, you say?
Yeah, that provided for hanging as punishment for buggery.
For buggery?
Do you know what buggery is?
I know what I think it is, but I don't think I want to say it.
We actually discussed this in law school.
You discussed buggery?
We did. It was in our criminal class, and I had no idea what buggery was. So I'd always heard of the term calling somebody a bugger or bugger off and all that.
Yeah, well, I know what I think it means, but I'm not sure if what I think it means is what you mean it means.
It's another term for sodomy.
That's what I thought it meant.
Okay. So, the Buggery Act of 1533, if you were convicted of that, you could be hung for it.
Now, is that with another person or with livestock?
I did actually not pull the Buggery Act of 1533 and read through it, so I'm not certain. I just know that the Buggery Act of 1533 provided for hanging for buggery.
Hanging for buggery.
Yes.
No, well,
No buggery allowed.
That buggery law didn't come over here to America, did it? That was just in England?
It was just in England. It was 1533. But
I say, have you seen Schmedley? Oh, poor Schmedley, he got caught buggering. They hung him the other day. That's what they said about Schmedley. He certainly was hung.
That reminds me of Blazing Saddles. Whatever the sheriff sees his old friends, and they say something like, "We heard you was hung." He's like, "And they were right." But actually, a lot of our laws, as we know, did come over from Britain. That's our common law. Basically, our entire judicial system is pretty much based on British common law. Our earlier cases are British cases, and pretty much our entire legal system is based on it. With the exception of Louisiana, they're based more on the French Napoleonic Code. But everywhere else in America is basically based on British law.
Down there, buggery was acceptable.
I don't know. I kind of doubt that, but
that's the French. Okay, sirrah, sirrah.
But yeah, there's a long history of the death penalty in Britain, and then subsequently in the colonial period of the U.S. There's a lot of capital punishment that took place as well. Actually, one of the earlier founding fathers, Thomas Jefferson, proposed a bill that he wanted the death penalty to only be used for treason and murder. This was back when he was. I think he was president, maybe, but it was actually defeated by one vote. So back then, even they were trying to start to limit maybe what it was used for, even at those times. In 1846, Michigan became the first state to abolish the death penalty for all crimes except treason. Later on, Rhode Island and Wisconsin got rid of it as well. So by the end of the 1800s, some countries had followed suit, and the trend was kind of moving away from the death penalty, even in some of the states here in the United States. But then you have other places like New York, and they actually built the first electric chair in 1888. And some other states started using this method too. So you kind of have, you can already see where it's going in different directions. People are abolishing it. Some people are improving it.
Was it in Sing Sing? Is that where their electric chair was?
Probably.
Isn't that the famous prison there, Sing Sing?
I think so. The chair's called Old Sparky.
Yeah.
Is that really its name, I wonder?
Yeah, I guess so.
There's an electric chair called Old Sparky, I think.
Yeah. He also used to be the coach of the Cincinnati Reds.
Sparky Anderson?
Yeah. I don't know if that's where he got his name. He survived it, and they made him the coach. I don't know.
So then from 1907 to 1917, six states completely had outlawed the death penalty. Three states actually limited to treason only. So this was about the same time as the Russian Revolution that was going on. And basically a lot of the treason issues, I think, are founded on that. There was a lot of worry about treason in our country.
And so, Russian spies?
Russian spies.
I thought that was during the McCarthy era.
Well,
they had all the communism and the commies are over here.
Well, there's been a couple of those scares. The first one was whenever the Russian Revolution took place when they with the czars, and they took over the czars and that whole thing that took place.
That's just bizarre.
That's bizarre.
You got it.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, I just played czars on Words with Friends.
Yeah.
And I the S on the end of czars, I put on the end of another word. There was a triple word score, and I got like 142 points for it or something like that. It was a big score in points.
Well, that's the only time having a czar ever paid off.
That's right. The 1920s. Saw a resurgence in the death penalty. The trend at that time among criminologists was that the death penalty was something that we really needed in our society. It was kind of a crucial part of it. So there's a bit of an upswing there. And there was also an upswing in crime around that time too, with the Roaring Twenties. And if you think about all the gangsters and all the shootouts and things like that, there was kind of an increase in the use of the death penalty at that time. And also public sentiment, because really public sentiment for the death penalty is kind of, it waxes and wanes.
That's exactly right. There's an article that I've got here from Time Magazine where they did an in-depth study of the death penalty. And that's one of the things that they said, is that public opinion is constantly changing and it's influenced by the crime rate. When the crime rate goes up, more public opinion increases towards the death penalty. And then as the crime rate starts going down, then people aren't so quick to want to do it. But what happens is, by the time we react to, say, the uptick, and we say we got to do something more, and they start adding the death penalty at places they don't have it, then by the time they finally get the law, by the time they realize it, pass the law, institute it, and everything else, by then the crime is on the downswing, and in public opinion is actually turned against it. So that's why you have the back and forth constantly on it, and it's usually behind the curve.
Laws take a while to be passed and change, that's for sure, especially things like that.
Yeah, because our politicians are not exactly, you know, right on top of these things. And they're not on cutting edge decision making.
No,
and they're following the herd.
And the legal process is definitely not efficient either. I mean, if you think about it, you have something as a bill has to be proposed, it has to have different readings and passed by one part, like the House, and has to be passed by the Senate, then back and forth in committees and joint bills. And then,
well, the other part to consider is reelection.
That's true.
You only want to pass a popular bill. You don't want to pass an unpopular one. So you want to pass it when the people are all on the same side as you, when the majority are in favor of it.
Yeah, and I mean, if you sponsor a bad bill, that could be kind of your legacy.
That's right.
Like if you were elected in the House of Delegates and you had some sort of law against buggery and you were the Tom Smurl anti-buggery law, and you'd be known for that forever.
Banning buggers everywhere.
So one of the downswings in the capital punishment was in the 1960s. So that was kind of when a big change took place in America in general. It was a very kind of revolutionary time.
Well, Vietnam was going on and all that. That probably was enough to cause everybody. We were more concerned with what was going on over in Vietnam than we were with the, you know, with that. A lot of people were being shipped off. You still had the draft.
That's true.
So a lot of people were being shipped off.
Well, the 1960s is when the legal arguments started to change too. Previously, the Fifth Amendment, the Eighth Amendment, and the 14th Amendment, they had been viewed to authorize the death penalty. But the consensus for the arguments then changed at this point, whereas these amendments were actually trying to be argued that they did not allow it. In particular, the Eighth Amendment, which prohibits cruel and unusual punishment, a lot of people started to argue that actually prohibited the death penalty under the Eighth Amendment.
Well, you know, that's one of the problems with it. It can't have cruel and unusual punishment. Any way you define it, putting someone to death is cruel and unusual.
That's true.
I mean, you can try to do it as cleanly as you want, and that's kind of where they moved along from hangings. They used to have public hangings, and you had the guillotine. I don't know if we ever had the guillotine over here, but they had it in other countries. You had firing squads. Those are all pretty messy ways of doing it. So then they go to the electric chair. Maybe that'll be better. And then they see a few eyeballs go blowing out of the head, and they decide, well, that's not too clean. So then they go to lethal injection, where the general thought is that you just give a guy a couple of shots and he just kind of closes his eyes and goes to sleep, and that's the end of it. But that's not always for sure. As one guy, they were going to kill him by lethal injection. It took him 2 hours, and the guy kept hanging in there, gasping and struggling with the witnesses that are in there and everything else. And then finally, he died of a heart attack. So, you know, there's just not a clean way to do it.
No.
It's not. And now you got drug companies that don't want to have their drugs involved in executions, so they're withholding it. So then states that still have lethal injection, they've got to try to find other drugs that are effective to use. And, of course, you don't have any test subjects to try it out on. So true. You just got to hope that it works. That worked on the pig. Maybe it'll work on a person.
You don't see too many people sign up for double-blind scientific studies on execution lethal
drugs. That's Darwin's theory. That's how you call the ones out of college that don't belong there.
That seems
the
like
ones
a
that sign up for that.
That seems like a Far Side cartoon. If it's not one, it should be. Well, one case in 1958 was Trope versus Dulles, and that was when the Supreme Court basically held that the Eighth Amendment contained an evolving standard of decency that marked the progress of a maturing society. So the court wasn't really ready to completely outlaw the death penalty, but that's kind of marked the evolution of it, where they were looking at it and saying, hey, maybe if we're going to have the death penalty, we need to kind of fine-tune some of the stuff we're doing with it and look at this a bit more closely, not just you know, kill them all. So
is that where they started adding certain appeal processes and stuff like that?
Certain appeal processes and just different things in general about jury instructions and things that had to be taking place in the case itself, the underlying case.
Well, I mean, here's the main thing. If you sentence someone to death, you want to make sure you got the right guy, that he was guilty, and that he's really the one that did it. Because if you kill him, there's no take backs from that.
No, that's the finality. There's no,
oopsie, we made a mistake on that one. Okay, you can go free now. We killed him. Oh, Oh, well, sorry about that. We'll send a note to the family.
That's like the Naked Gun whenever Leslie Nielsen, his character's cleaning out his desk, and he's like, oh, here's that missing evidence from the so-and-so trial. He goes, my God, he was innocent.
It doesn't do you much good then.
No, not at all.
Now, I found a story here about a guy that was spent 28 years on death row for a murder that he didn't commit. And 28 years later, they were able to prove that he hadn't done it, and it got him out. And that's what, you know, he was saying. I sat there on death row all that time knowing I was an innocent man and there was nothing that I could do about it. Of course, it also ends up when you let people out after that, they usually end up getting a large chunk of change from right. From the state for their pain and suffering.
Well, I mean, give up 28 years of your life. That's, I mean,
your life, that's everything. Take 28 years out of anybody's life. And I mean, you know, you miss out on your kids and everything else. I mean, there's no making that back up.
No, not at all.
That's just like we talked about on the murder episode. No matter what sentence you give somebody, the victim is still dead. And that's the way this is. No matter what you do, you know, you got to make sure it's right. So I really believe that there's got to be almost like I would feel better if there was an overseer on a death penalty. There's like a panel of people that have the nuances of the law, and that anytime somebody is sentenced to death, they review it to see that they feel it reaches an even higher level of certainty, or else if it doesn't, then it goes to life imprisonment, because that's just something you can't make a mistake on. And it, you know, if you, one we talked about a couple episodes ago, or maybe it was the last episode, where they had the guy on the surveillance tape shooting the other person in the head.
Right.
All right, that's hard and fast evidence. I mean, unless there's some doubt that that's the same guy, that's hard and fast evidence he did it. So once you determine, yeah, that was murder one, okay, now, and you give him the death penalty, that would be okay. I mean, you're sure that it is.
I see the point of that, but at the same time, you're saying, okay, well, if we need a higher standard for the death penalty, then why shouldn't we just use that same higher standard for all crimes? Just as, you know, to play devil's advocate.
Well, because in other crimes, even though you've caused some hardships, you haven't killed them. I mean, you turn around and you let them out. Stephen Avery, you know, they let him out after how many years? The first time, 10 years or whatever it was, and he wasn't dead. Of course, they put him back in, hoping they get him back out again. At least from what I've seen.
Yeah.
But I guess what I'm saying is that in any other sentence, you always have that possibility that if you made a mistake, you can straighten it out and the person will get out. If you kill them, you can't do that, because one of the other problems with the death penalty is it takes way too long to actually kill somebody. And that's part of the problem.
Yeah, there's a long appeal process, which we'll talk about that maybe here in a minute. But a bit more about the history of it. So in 1971, Crampton v. Ohio, the defendants argued that it was a violation of their 14th Amendment rights to have the jurors, that they had unrestricted discretion in deciding whether the defendant should live or die, and that it was unconstitutional to have their guilt and sentence determined by one set of deliberations. And the court rejected those arguments, basically saying that we don't think that you're right. It's not a violation of the 14th Amendment. So then subsequent to that, in Furman v. Georgia in 1972, the court again heard arguments about the jurors deciding guilt and sentencing someone to die in the same set of deliberations, that it was unconstitutional. But this time it was argued under the 8th Amendment that it was cruel and unusual to allow a jury in one set of deliberations to basically sentence somebody saying they were guilty, then also sentencing them to die. That basically it was arbitrary and capricious. So at that point, the court suspended the death penalty, and they effectively voided 40 death penalty statutes throughout the U.S. and commuted the sentence of 629 death row inmates to life imprisonment. So based on that, that's when states, the court at that point didn't really make a ruling saying that we don't think the death penalty should be allowed or capital punishment is outlawed. They just said that the method in which it was applied with having that one set of deliberations decide guilt and death was unconstitutional in the Eighth Amendment. So it's kind of a different thing from making a decision about capital punishment in general versus it just violates one, the method of it violates it, if you understand that difference.
Well, I think I could argue that both ways, because you have people that already have all the facts. They've already been through the trial, however long it is, because most of these trials are not short trials. You're not talking about 3 days and then they're rendering a decision. They're usually long, drawn-out things. And not only that, they're taking place 10 years after the crime or something like that. It takes them that long before they get there. So you finally go through all that. You determine that they're guilty. Now the people that are there, they've heard all the evidence. They've heard all the arguments. So now they decide, is this worthy of the death penalty? Otherwise, you got to have a completely separate trial and start all over and tell another jury about it and give all the information, I think. And all they're going to decide is that worth a death penalty or not?
Right. Well, a lot of times it's just it's bifurcated trials. So basically the guilt phase is one portion of it. The sentencing portion is a separate. And that's basically what all the states rewrote their laws.
Easy for you to say.
Yeah, easy for me to say. They rewrote their laws to allow for bifurcated trials. So basically the guilt phase.
A what trial?
A bifurcated.
Bifurcated?
Yep. That means.
Is that like buggery?
No, it's not like buggery at all.
What's bifurcated?
Bifurcated is
Did you try to slip that one by me or try to use it later on me?
It may be one I'm using.
Give me the definition up front here, counselor.
It's the it's where the guilt phase and the sentencing phase are two separate deliberations. This law was argued in the Gregg versus Georgia case in 1978, and the Supreme Court said as long as you have these bifurcated trials that it's okay, you can do that. In 1977, after that Furman case, the first person to be executed since the Furman case was a man in Utah by firing squad. That's how he was ended up being executed, 1977.
And you know who that was, don't you?
I do not.
Gary Gilmore. Yeah. You ever heard of him?
No, he's Gary Gilmore.
There's a famous movie that was made, The Executioner's Song. Tommy Lee Jones starred as Gary Gilmore.
Oh,
Rosanna
really?
Arquette was his girlfriend. And he had been like a lifelong criminal. And he had been in and out of prison most all his life, juvenile and adult. And he was about 35 and they let him out for, you know, he served his time and was out. And he'd been out for several months, 6-7 months, something like that. And he went and robbed, I think, like a store. And even though the clerk complied, he shot the clerk and killed him. And then he went and robbed a hotel. And even though the hotel clerk complied, he shot and killed him after he got the money. So anyway, they arrested him. They found him. He had accidentally shot himself in the hand as well during one of the robberies. And the blood trail led from the hotel to his apartment because it wasn't very far from the hotel. So they ended up getting him and arresting him. And they convicted him of murder and sentenced him to death. And he said that he actually, after he went through the mandatory appeals, he didn't want any more appeals. And he actually went to court against his mother, who his mother was trying to file an appeal, and he didn't want her to. So he was saying, look, my rights should override her rights. And he said, you all sentenced me to death. I want to die. And so they, at the time, Utah only had two ways to implement the death penalty, hanging and firing squad. He chose a firing squad. And he asked, now it was recorded, but this wasn't done. He wanted it broadcast on television. He thought that it would be a good deterrent to everyone to see that. So they did record it, but they did not air it. But they're in their firing squad. They have five marksmen, and four of them are supposed to have live rounds, and one of them have a blank. That way none of them ever really know whether they were the ones that shot him or not. But his brother was given the body still in the clothes from the execution. And the brother counted five bullet holes, so he said, boy, I think the state really wanted him dead. But that's a really good movie if you ever want to watch it. I imagine it came out in the early 80s. And Tommy Lee Jones, that's the first thing I remember actually seeing him in. I'm sure he was in some other movies, but that's the first one that I remember him in.
Yeah.
And Rosanna Arquette.
That sounds like a good movie. I've never heard of that before.
Executioner Song.
I wonder what the first movie I saw him in was. I'm trying to think, me personally. When Tommy Lee Jones first popped up on my radar.
That's the first one I remember seeing him in.
I can't really remember.
Yeah.
No. I might have to go back and check that one out. I've never seen that. It'd be kind of interesting, too, to check that movie out, especially, you know, knowing a bit more about the death penalty. Because, honestly, death penalty is not something that I was, like, you know, super familiar with because I don't really deal with it. You know, death penalty cases are kind of few and far between.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, in order to become a death penalty attorney, you have to actually sit on so many trials and kind of almost apprentice to become a death row certified attorney. So, and I'm not that, so.
Well, and that's good because that adds to that measure of, you know, like I say, if somebody's on death row, you want to make damn sure that they're the one that did it. There's no take backs.
Exactly. So the Supreme Court's kind of continued to limit the death penalty over the years, basically saying that it has to be only for capital crimes and it's not allowed to be for capital crimes, which did not involve the death of the victim. You know, mentally ill people cannot be executed, nor can juveniles, because it's basically, it's argued that it's cruel and unusual under the Eighth Amendment again, that if you have someone, and this is kind of goes to, I guess, maybe their mental capacity, that if they don't quite have the mental capacity to understand the severity of the act they committed, and then you put them to death for it, that therefore that would be cruel and unusual to do that. So
I can follow that reason.
Yeah. So.
All right. But, now tell me this. There's most of the time the death penalties vary state to state. However, there is a federal death penalty, federal capital punishment.
There are. Yes, there is. And I was actually not aware that there was a separate federal death penalty.
You're welcome.
Yeah. So, but most of these things for the federal death penalty, the offenses, I counted maybe like 28 or so of them through the different U.S. code, but most of them involve actually murder or killing someone. They're just different ways the person was killed. Like, 8 U.S.C. 1342 is murder related to smuggling of an alien. 18 U.S.C. 36, murder committed during a drug-related drive-by shooting. 18 U.S.C. 37, murder committed at an airport serving international civil aviation. So there are these different ones that are federal death penalty, but they kind of generally involve murder or killing someone.
Terrorism laws.
Terrorism laws.
I think
espionage. Espionage is one, too.
I think that in the terrorism laws, too, though, like if you set off a bomb, even if nobody dies, I think you can still be found guilty of the terrorist act, though, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And sentenced to death.
Yes, I believe so.
Well,
I mean, you could also say, like, they might be charged under, like, for example, maybe that the espionage or the treason, mm-hmm. you know, especially if it's, you know, you're getting into kind of some gray areas there where you might be able to charge them for one of those type things.
There's another one in there that has to do with intimidating witnesses, that even if you don't kill anybody, if you intimidate them or tell them you're going to kill them, if they testify in a federal trial, then you can be subjected to the death penalty for that.
Which one was that?
It was down there towards the bottom of the list. And mine didn't have all the codes by it. Attempting, authorizing, or advising the killing of any officer, juror, or witness in cases involving a continuing criminal enterprise, even if such killing does not occur.
Oh, yeah, that's... So, basically, the Kennedy versus Louisiana case that came out in 2008, that was the one that kind of talked about whether or not you could have a capital offense like that, which did not have murder. And that 18 U.S.C. 3591, the attempting, authorizing, or advising killing of an officer, juror, or witness, it's not clear whether or not that would actually be able to withstand now that the Kennedy versus Louisiana case has been decided.
Hmm.
So
it's in there, but nobody's ever tested it.
Not yet. Well, maybe somebody's been put to death for it before, but since 2008, since that new case came out, it might not stand.
Oh, okay.
So that's kind of the ever-changing.
Well, it kind of sounds like one of those things about organized crime that, you know, that's what that law came up as an answer to.
Oh, I'm certain, yeah.
Yeah, because it says a continuing criminal enterprise.
Right.
So.
Racketeering.
Yeah. The mafia. That's or right. I guess.
Picture like, was it?
Jimmy Hoffa
and what was it? The Kevin Costner movie,
The Untouchables.
The Untouchables, yeah.
Yeah, it was a movie that you had the series with Elliot Ness that we talked about before.
Yep.
With Robert Stack, I mean, playing Elliot Ness. And then Kevin Costner played him in The Untouchables, the movie.
Yeah. When I think about gangsters, that movie always pops up in my, pops up in my head.
Well, that's the most common era that we think of.
Yeah.
When they were all running around. Well, Mike, the judges ruled that it's time to pay court costs. So let's approach the bench for a sidebar and mention our sponsors.
That's right, Tommy. And we want to give a big thank you to our first sponsor for recognizing this show as a great investment. So tell our listeners who our first sponsor is, please.
Okay, Mike. We are proud to announce Mike M. and Tommy S. of Court Appointed as our new sponsor. This legal mockumentary with co-hosts Mike and Tommy would like to ask every listener to please tell a friend about their podcast, because if every listener told one person about it and they became a listener, that would be almost double the number of people listening. Again, it is a podcast called Court Appointed. We recommend you give it a listen.
That sounds like some substantial math was done to come up with those statistical figures. So let's see if we can't help them out and try the recommendation of recruiting one friend to listen. That sure was nice of them to sponsor us, Tommy. Also, if anyone else would like a sidebar, please contact us at our Facebook page, Court Appointed, or tweet at us, court_appointed, or email us, courtappointedpodcast@gmail.com, and we will let you know how to file the proper motions to get a sidebar.
That is great, Counselor Mike. Now, the sidebar is over, and the judge says we may proceed. Now, I thought it was one thing that was interesting is the federal death penalty was first tied to the Crimes Act of 1790 is when they first did it. And at the time, there were only six offenses that fell under that. And that was treason, counterfeiting, murder, and three variations of piracy on the high seas. that was the only thing they had. Now, the first poor sumbitch that got prosecuted under that was a guy named Thomas Byrd, and he was one of the ones on the high seas. They said that he killed the captain. There was only five of them on this boat, and two English guys, the captain and him. There was a guy from Norway. There was a guy from America. And there was a 14-year-old boy on the boat from Africa named Cuffy. I don't know why they named him, but they named him. He was Cuffy. So this boat was working over on the coast of Africa. It was a slave ship, and is working on the coast of Africa. And for some reason, they never gave any details as to why, but Thomas Byrd killed the captain, or at least that's what the others said. So they sailed the boat. Why they did this, I don't know. They sail this boat. It can't be a big boat. There's only four of them now on the boat. And they came from Africa to Maine. They landed there, came in, and I guess one of them told on them and said, hey, those guys or something, I went to bed, kind of like the cannibal story.
Right.
I wasn't paying attention. I didn't say yes or no. All I know is I woke up and the captain was dead, and these two guys seemed to know something about it.
Right.
So they put him and the guy from Norway on trial. Well, first of all, they had to sit in jail for a year because this was 1790. They had just put all this in place in America, so they didn't even have the judicial system set up yet. So he had to sit in jail for a year waiting for him to get the court set up. So then he goes to trial, and they found the guy from Norway not guilty, and they found him guilty and sentenced him to death. So he wrote a letter to George Washington, who was just starting as president, and said, please commute my sentence. I'll take anything short of death if you'd help me out. You know, don't commit this heinous thing of putting someone to death. George Washington never replied.
Yeah.
So he ended up being put to death. So he was the first guy to die from it. And it was from one of the ones of piracy on the high seas there. So we were really worried about that back in those days, that there were six ways that you could be found guilty and put to death. And three of them had to do with being on a boat in the middle of the ocean.
Piracy was kind of a bad thing back then. That was a huge deal.
I don't understand how anybody finds out. I mean, there's only four of you on the boat, and I'm guessing Cuffy ain't talking. So that only leaves three of you. Somebody had to come back and say something, because why wouldn't you have just thrown the body overboard? I mean, I don't know how that works. How do they even find out?
Loose lips sink ships.
And get you killed. They hung poor old Tom Byrd.
Well, I mean, he was tried by a jury of his peers, I assume.
Well,
maybe.
I don't know. They said it was kind of strange. It was an English ship with an English captain, and he was an Englishman, and they were on the coast of Africa, but yet he comes over and he gets tried in America. I don't know. And you notice the one guy, they took his word and let him go. He was the American.
Yeah.
The English guy and the Norway guy, they put on trial.
We trust this guy. He's cool.
He's an American. You can trust him.
Yeah, well, the federal death penalty and the federal crimes is kind of interesting because I think you had mentioned this when we were talking about this a little bit beforehand, is that if you are in a state which does not recognize the death penalty, yet you commit a federal offense, which there is a death penalty, in theory, you could be put to death in a state that does not allow the death penalty.
Yeah, it said at first the federal government was very hesitant to apply the death penalty in states that didn't have it. Kind of went against the grain, but it's become more commonplace. If you violate these certain rules, the 21, 22, whatever you said it was, those things, that it's more likely you could get the death penalty. Just, for example, the Boston Marathon bomber.
Yeah.
Massachusetts doesn't have the death penalty, but he's been given the death penalty.
Right, yeah. I mean, I guess, the federal government's always going to trump state law. So, I mean, if you commit a federal offense, then it is what it is. I guess maybe there was a bit more deference to states' rights over the course of the years, which is kind of eroding, maybe. I don't know. Stronger federal government.
Well, it's changing times. What did that something you read there that one of them called it the evolving American, maturing society or something like that?
Yeah, that was
finding.
That was in the Trope v. Dulles that said that, talking about the Eighth Amendment, that contained an evolving standard of decency that marked the progress of a maturing society.
Well, I mean, I think it's the same thing. Society is always evolving. And so these things are constantly going to be changing our thoughts about it and stuff like that. I mean, you know, one of the things that makes the death penalty so bad right now is we don't have a good way to do it. It's unwieldy. They say your chances of being actually executed, even if you're sentenced to death, you're more likely to get struck by lightning than you are to be executed. I mean, there's like one guy sat on death row for 30 years and eventually died of cancer, and they never did get around to killing him. You know, and it's become arbitrary and capricious in how it's administered.
Yeah, I mean, it does take a long time because you have the appeals process the appeals process really for any crime can be quite extensive, but for death penalty cases in particular, it goes on and on and on.
Well, there's automatic appeals.
Yeah, there are.
If it's a death penalty, it's ones you have to go through.
Right.
So, and then anything, there's several other things. They're very lenient on it because they want to be able to, you know, if anything comes up and you are innocent, then they want to be able to reverse that. In California, they have the largest death row population in the United States. They have like 750 people sitting on death row. And it's costing the state about $110 million a year to keep them on death row. And they're so backed up because they have these certain appeals that have to be heard if you're on death row. And there's only a certain body of people that can handle those appeals. And they're in such short supply to do that, that it takes forever to get them through. They said even if they started right now pushing them all through, they'd take them 150 years to clear up those people sitting on death row.
At the current rate?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, you know, it costs you more to have somebody on death row. So if you're incarcerating people, it's cheaper to have them in there for life without parole than it is to have them on death row.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. No. Economically, it does not make sense to have a death penalty.
And in California recently, they had a vote about it. Just this past election, November 8th, they had a vote. And they had two, propositions on the ballot. One was to eliminate the death penalty. The other was to speed it up. And part of the way they speed it up is they were going to qualify more people that would be able to handle where that bottleneck is of that appeal process of only a certain number of people that were able to handle that.
Right.
They're going to make more people qualified to do it. Like your lawyer that handled your case where you were found guilty and sentenced to death, he can now handle your appeal. Even if he isn't one of these others, he can handle it if he did that.
And see, the main problem I have with that is that the almost the main appeal that everyone uses in criminal cases is ineffective assistance of counsel. So that's basically saying that the lawyer screwed up in the previous case. So I don't understand how that's going to work if you have one lawyer saying, oh, I screwed up on this, I screwed up on that, I screwed up on this.
Well, my main thing about it is the guy lost. So you want him representing you in your last chance appeal? The guy that already lost and got you the death sentence? Well, I mean, you got yourself the death sentence, but he was the one that represented you and he didn't get you off. You know, well, so I don't know.
Maybe they shouldn't have killed somebody then.
That's right. Yeah, that could help. If you quit killing people, this won't happen.
Yeah.
There's a very simple answer for it, but
one of the appeals process in most states is called habeas corpus.
Yeah.
It's a writ of petitioning for a writ of habeas corpus. Do you know what habeas corpus means?
It means bring in the body.
Now, you may have the body is actually the Latin term.
Yeah.
And it's something, it's a writ that is challenging a unlawful detention or imprisonment. And it's one of the appeals processes.
Well, if that's what habeas corpus is, what is Corpus Christi?
That's a place for margaritas in spring break in Texas.
Well, right? I know, but does that mean Christie's buried there or something?
Well, I mean, I guess obviously it means like body of Christ.
Oh, is that what it is?
You're supposed to say amen.
Amen.
If someone says body of Christ, you're supposed to say
amen. Hallelujah. Well, okay, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah.
I thought maybe that meant there was somebody buried on the beach.
Christie?
Yeah.
Chris Christie?
Well, now he's going to be buried under a bridge.
Maybe a beach whale.
Yep. But anyways, so California, they had to vote one of those two things. What do you think? A bunch of liberal Californians, what do you think they would vote?
You'd think they'd get rid of it.
That's what I would have thought. They voted to speed it up. They voted no to getting rid of it, and they voted yes to speeding it up. So they're going to try to speed up the execution process there.
Yeah, that's one of those things that's pretty strange if you think about it, because California, you consider it being one of the more liberal places, but yet,
yeah,
you know, that just goes to show you can't just slap the liberal conservative label on everybody and expect that's going to be a, you know, black and white definition for everybody.
I guess there's some people there in California that actually wear shoes and not just flip-flops and sarongs or whatever those other big floppy shirts are and flowers in their hair, like going to San Francisco to meet the girl with the flower in her hair or whatever.
At least 700 of them have guns and shoot people on death row.
750.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
they're not all hippies, huh?
You had mentioned earlier that your view on the death penalty had changed after you started doing research for this. I was just kind of curious about that. What can you explain more about that?
Well, I'm one of those ones that if you'd have asked me this without doing any research, that I'd say we need to cut out all the appeals. If they're sentenced to death, we know they killed them. We need to kill them. We need to expand it to other crimes. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, child abusers.
Right.
Child abusers are not going to get better. You know, sexual child abusers, they have a problem. Whenever they get back out, they're going to go do it again, unless you do something to alter them so that they can't or something. They're going to go do it again. As far as I'm concerned, we can't allow those people back out into society. Why should we just harbor them into prisons forever?
Yeah.
That's my opinion, that you expand it into areas like that and get rid of it. They're starting to look at, you know, we had the case that made the national news where, 21 people overdosed in a single day on heroin because of a bad batch that put out. The guy mixed it with fentanyl and it killed all those people. And now they've got the guy that supplied those drugs. Why is he not a mass murderer? Why wouldn't you apply it to that? Well, his intention wasn't to kill him. His intention was he gave him a drug that would kill him and he shouldn't have been doing it anyway. It's a felony murder.
So your thought then is that the way your thoughts on the death penalty has evolved is you want to expand it.
No, I do. I really think those things should happen. However, I don't believe that's possible. I also don't believe until it's in this Time magazine article too, until the general public accepts that death, there's no clean way to do it. There's nothing pretty about it. And the most effective way to kill somebody is a guillotine. It's quick. It's over just like that. There's no pain. There's no suffering. But who's going to be the one to say, yeah, let's chop off people's heads? Is that what a civilized society does?
Probably not.
That's what I mean. But as far as if you want to do it humanely and you want to do it quickly and the person doesn't suffer, that's the quickest and most efficient way to do it.
So do you think that basically under the Eighth Amendment that prohibits cruel and unusual punishment, that we need to abolish the Eighth Amendment? Or do you think we need to just change the scope or definition of what cruel and unusual punishment means?
I don't think that we as a society are going to accept what is necessary to do to efficiently execute people that deserve to be executed. So instead of, you know, it's like they make the point that it's really cruel and unusual punishment to sentence somebody to stay forever in jail with the possibility that at some point we might choose to kill you. You know, it'd be better. I would say that it'd be better to say, this is the date you're going to die. 1 year from today, you're going to be executed. Any appeals that you have will be processed before that year is up. And at that point, you will be executed unless we have commuted your sentence.
What about all the different cases where people, you have the wrong person and there's been, you know, wrong convictions?
Well, that's what I say, that's why you need that oversight committee that's going to look at it again. But I guess what I'm saying, realistically, none of this stuff can be done. So with that being the case, because of the extreme amount of extra money and all the other stuff that goes on, the best thing to do is just sentence these people to life without possibility of parole. Just take the death penalty out of the equation. As satisfying as it is sometimes when somebody really commits a heinous crime and they kill somebody or they kill a child or you know, they assassinate a president or something like that, and we want to get them back, you know, we want to seek retribution, don't kill them. Just put them in prison for life.
You know, that would actually simplify and probably save a lot of money if we just did that.
Well, it would. Like I say, they're saying that the death row inmates in California alone are costing an extra $110 million a year.
Yeah.
So, as I say, efficiently, we can't do it efficiently. We don't have the stomach for it as a society to do it properly. We don't have the omnipotence to say this person absolutely did it, or at least not 100% of the time. You know, we may get it right 98% of the time, but what about the other 2%? You can't get it back.
I mean, I my personal feelings on it, morally, I don't like the death penalty because I just don't like the idea of putting somebody to death for committing a crime, even if it's murder or taking the life of another. I don't like that idea. I think as a civilized society, I think we need to move past that. Economically, I don't think it makes sense either. But that being said, I've never, fortunately, been put in a position where I've had a family member be a victim of a crime like that. That's not to say that if something happened, you know, and somebody did something to my family, I would want that person dead probably. I'm sure I actually would.
And that's what I say. If I could say, you know, we need to define who was subject to this, and there is an efficient way to do it and move them through and get it done efficiently, then I prefer a death penalty. I think we should have one.
We could pass a law then that says if you mess with anybody in our family, that there is a death penalty. And the way it would be resolved would be 10 minutes alone in a room with our family. And then
you got enough guns. We could take care of that. But I'm just saying that I don't think that we can ever achieve that standard. And with that being the case, let's quit kidding ourselves and just say this is what it is. We don't have the guts to do what is right. We don't have the abilities to, or all the ones that are not absolutely beyond a shadow of a doubt. You know, that if, and you know, eyewitnesses shouldn't count. They're completely unreliable.
That's true. Now we could do a whole episode on that.
They had one where a guy was let go. He was put in jail based on the testimony of a 12-year-old. And he was in prison for like 20 years. And then his 12-year-old, who's now a 32-year-old, said, I didn't really see it, but I knew that's what people, he's the one people wanted me to say, so I said it was him. So, you know, you can't put people in prison on things like that. If you have absolute proof, you know, then you do.
And I just think, I don't think as a society, America, I don't think we want to be the country that has the death penalty. Because if you look at international statistics for countries that use the death penalty and use it efficiently or whatever, you're looking at China, Iran, Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, and Iraq. I mean, are those the kind of cultured civilizations we want to try to emulate and be in the same ballpark with? You know, I don't know that that's.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so. So
they're not exactly champions of human rights, are they?
No. And I mean, we don't even know about like North Korea. Who knows what they do or what they're doing there?
Well, heck, Kim Jong-un, if you challenge him or whatever, he just kills you. He killed his own uncle at one point because he didn't want to take the chance that the guy might challenge him for authority or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't have a death penalty. They just kill whoever he doesn't like.
Indiscriminate.
Yeah. You don't want to get on the wrong side of him.
Yeah. Well, it's a hard topic, and maybe one of our more serious episodes.
Well, it didn't mean to be. Yeah. But I think if we kept it here, the only thing to do is put everybody in one place, whether you're in the death penalty for a state, that the state put you there, or the federal government put you there. Put everybody in one building. Build one building, and that's all they do is they house death row inmates. They push them through to either execute them or turn them back out into the prison system and life without parole. That's the ultimate. And that's all they do is work them through right there. And that's all that staff does is work the group through. And everybody gets a death sentence. That's where they go.
And you think that if we had a higher standard for the death penalty, you would be more comfortable with that too?
I would be. Because I don't want to execute somebody that's innocent. So I think there should be a higher standard. And you'd err on the side of, you know, hey, we can't say absolutely 100%. There's something here. We do think that he did it, but, you know, it's not enough to overturn it, but let's not kill him.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's the problem with the law. And I tell this to clients sometimes is that the law is not going to give you a satisfactory result. And I think this is one of those issues that we're not going to have. There's not a perfect way to redress, to give people satisfaction or to make it perfect. Because when you take somebody's life and kill somebody, it's just, there's no way to compensate that or make it right.
We're on the downward turn. I mean, it says the number of inmates put to death in 2014 was the fewest in 20 years, and the number of new death row sentences imposed by U.S. courts, 72, was the fewest in modern American history.
Well, if we're moving away from it, I'm pretty glad about that.
There's only been, since the start of 2014, all but two of the nation's 49 executions have been carried out by just five states: Texas, Missouri, Florida, Oklahoma, and Georgia.
But, you know, I mean, I wonder, the crime rates, I think statistics have shown that the death penalty is not a deterrent for crime. I wonder if the crime rate in those states would bear that out, since they're the ones that do that the most.
Well, it's so arbitrary, though. That's what it is. It's like we don't have one, because there is no rhyme or reason as to, if you get sentenced to death, you've got like a 2% chance of actually being executed. And if you're in that 2%, you're not any more deserving of death than the other people that are on death row. So it's really arbitrary as to who those people are. So until we're at 100% efficiency executing them all, it's really I don't think that it's having the effect because of that. You know what I mean? I mean, people are saying, sure, they might give me death, but it'll never happen.
Yeah.
You know, you got people that have been sitting on death row 40 years.
Well, I mean, and also, too, that we're applying a rational approach to something that is pretty much people doing irrational things. You know, it's not people. I don't think people are looking at it on one hand saying, okay, weighing the option, will I get the death penalty if I kill this person? Will I not? I don't know if that's actually a deterrent.
Well, and it's also, you know, the crime rate has gone down on a lot of these things. Now, if you're living in Chicago, you're not noticing that, but
right.
Overall it has. So once again, we're back in one of those downward trends where people are not really wanting to see the death penalty. So more states are moving towards abolishing it. It said that if there is a bias popping up in today's death penalty, it's one of class rather than race. The best defense lawyers cost a lot of money. As a favorite saying goes on death row, those without the capital get the punishment.
And you're quoting from this article, that Time article?
Yeah. The Time article came out. It was called The End of the Death Penalty.
Yeah. I flipped through it a little bit. I didn't finish it. I want to read that whole thing, though. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, they had a lot of interesting stuff in it. And they said, you know, part of the reason is governments are going broke and that they can't afford to keep up with it. And they'd have no choice in it, though. Because as long as we keep sentencing people to death, they have to keep going, you know, through the procedures with it.
Yeah, because you gotta afford them those protections under the Constitution. Well, I think that's going to bring us to
Legal Briefs.
Legal Briefs is the part of the show where we go over a couple of terms that we discussed, and we kind of, I guess, reinforce basically these terms so we can drive them into your brain like a nail.
Bullet.
No, not a bullet.
Like a firing squad. We've got death on the brain.
In the firing squad, I don't think they shoot them in the head, though. I think they shoot them in the chest, don't they?
Yeah, they shoot them in the heart.
Yeah.
They usually have a suit, and they either have a heart on it, or I think they have a little square paper or something that they hang on it right there to give the marksman a target.
Oh, man, that's so disturbing.
Well, they're blindfolded. They don't see it on there.
It's still disturbing, though.
Yeah.
Well, the first term is buggery.
Buggery. That's an English term for sodomy.
It was, and it was the Buggery Act of 1533 provided for hanging as punishment for buggery.
Oh, no.
We do not have a buggery law in the U.S. that I'm aware of.
I don't even want to comment on a buggery law. Good, bad, or indifferent.
Smart man.
There's nothing I can say that would be good.
The next term is bifurcated trial.
Bifurcated. I knew you were going to slip that in, but you were trying to slip that by without even explaining it to me.
Well, when we go back through, you'll see that actually I had said it twice before I said it that last time when you finally asked me what it was.
Well, that's because you were slipping it by me. It sounded like it had to do with buggery, but it had to do with that they're going over dual things for it. One is for the guilt, I guess, and the other is for the sentencing. And they're doing them both at the same time. And it's that principle is what made it legal after that challenge to the amendment.
The jury phase is bifurcated. So basically the guilt phase and the sentencing phase are two separate deliberations among the jury. So they meet one time, they're saying, yeah, the guy did it. Then they meet again and they say, kill him or don't kill him.
And he deserves to die.
And he deserves to die. So they don't sit there and say he's guilty and he deserves to die. So it's two separate deliberations, and that's called bifurcated trial.
You know, in France, when they had the death sentence, they executed him with a guillotine.
Right.
And there was one situation where if the guillotine failed to kill you, you got to set free. So they had they were marching the prisoners out there that would be executed, the first one out, and they dropped the guillotine, and it stopped just inches from his neck. They opened it up and let him walk free. Next guy went walking up, and, I forgot to say, they asked him, did he have any last words, and he said, Vive la France! They dropped the guillotine, he didn't die. Next one goes walking up, and they said, do you have any last words? Vive la France! They dropped the guillotine, stopped inches from his neck. He walked free, too. So the third guy goes walking up and said, you got any last words? He said, yeah, if you put a couple of drops of oil right up there in that corner, I think that'll fix your problem.
not the smartest guy.
No, but he was very mechanical minded.
It's probably something. That's like something I would say. let me help you out here, friend.
The guy that invented the guillotine, it was named after him, and he didn't want it named after him. But he invented it because they were trying to find a more humane way to execute people in France. And he invented the guillotine for that. So then when they started calling it the guillotine, that was his last name. I don't know what his first name was, but his last name was that. And they started calling it that. And he was like, please call it anything else. Call it anything else. I mean, that's as bad as being Thomas Crapper, isn't it? And you invented the toilet. Get in here. We need a crapper.
Yeah. That would be actually kind of a bad thing. I mean, I wonder if there's probably still families out there with that last name.
Crapper?
Guillotine.
Guillotine, yeah. In France, I guess.
They all died off. And all.
Well, they might do like some people do, and they change the pronunciation.
Yeah.
I don't know. There was a, you won't remember this. There was an old show on TV called Dance Fever. And the host was like James Terrio or something like that.
Danny Terrio. I think for some reason that name sticks out in pop culture.
It might be. Well, there was a family that lived across the street from us down in Waycross. Their last name was spelled exactly the same way. It was a French name. And it's spelled exactly the same way. But you know how they said it? Theriault.
Oh, really?
Because that was phonetically, if you looked at how it was spelled Theriault.
That's funny.
So in Southeast Georgia, nobody would ever get Terrio, so they just went with Theriault.
I remember the Theriaults. That's funny. I didn't realize that was spelled the same way as
as Danny Terrio is spelled exactly the same way.
That's interesting.
That's funny. Well, the street down the street from me where I grew up, we always called it Marquis Drive, M-A-R-Q-U-I-S.
Marquis Drive.
Yeah, Marquis Drive. And nobody would call it Marquis.
That's funny. Southern Georgia. And then the last term is habeas corpus.
Habeas corpus. That means bring the body.
Yes, and it's one of the appeals where you are challenging basically unlawful detention or imprisonment or something along those lines.
So that means if they can't find the body, they can't convict you. And if the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit.
Yeah. If you remember anything from this podcast, just remember that. If the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit.
That's right. That's the number one rule of law. That, and if I see it, I'll know it when I see it.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well, then not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out, though, right?
Usually. Good. This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurf. And I...